Well, hello everyone. I hope you're sitting comfortably today because this is going to take a little bit of time to go through the history of Tony Blair's absolute obsession with digital ID. But we are finally reaching the home straight. It looks like it is happening. It has been all over the news this past week. It's going to go ahead. Blair himself has been all over the place giving interviews and personal appeals for it to happen. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the history of this, going all the way back to 2006, when Blair tried to get this done the first time around, how he's not let it go for the past 20 years, how it is happening now, and what he personally has done to make it happen. And finally, even though it is happening, why we should remember why, because I get a lot of questions these days. Oh, why shouldn't we go for this? You know, it seems like a good idea, etc., etc. Just reminding ourselves some of the arguments against going down this route a little bit late now, because it looks like it's full steam ahead, basically, with the digital ID agenda. But anyway, if we go all the way back, before we get going, I will remind everyone, do buy courses at the academic agency, Trivium. Bestseller there. Latest course is Foundations of Shakespeare. I've written five books on Shakespeare, so you know, world expert in that topic. So you should pick that one up as well. Anyway, let's go all the way back to 2006, where there was a big debate. Blair wanted to bring in those days, an ID card, right, a national identity card, with all of your details on a single car with your photo there, okay? Which could then be electronically scanned in different places, okay? It was talked about then, and a lot of civil rights campaigners were against it. There were privacy concerns. And Blair back then dismissed the civil rights argument against what he was trying to do. He says the scheme has to go ahead as a matter of modernity. And he also said that people give details daily to private firms, i.e. you're giving data away all the time, so anything you can care about privacy and whatnot, really it's not really a concern because you're already doing it. Okay, we need to do this. What's remarkable is that the basic argument from Blair has not changed one iota in 24 years. That was 2006. He is still making exactly the same arguments right now. David Blunkett and various members of his cabinet have also been banging the drum, and as we'll see, it looks finally just through sheer determination, just not giving up, not letting go over all these years, it looks like they're finally going to get their way. Now, if you're wondering what happened, how was it that Blair wasn't able to get this through back in 2006, he did actually win the vote in the House of Commons, but it was blocked by the House of Lords, who kept on sending the bill back. They basically defeated the compulsory ID cards through the back door in the Lords, and they kept on sending it back. You can have a look. This was in 2006. They kept on having the vote. It would go through the Commons with a majority. 33 is a slim majority for Blair because he had backbench rebellion on this issue back then. But then the Lords would send it back and it would go back to the Commons and the Lords would send it back again. And essentially what happened is they kept on doing this, and then the implementation was slow rolled during the Gordon Brown era. Remember, Blair actually stepped down in 2007. Then during the Brown era, it was slow rolled. Even though it passed into law as the, I think it was called the Identity Cards Act 2006. So it never actually came out. I think there are a couple of prototype cards printed in places like Manchester and places like that, but it never actually got rolled out nationwide. And then David Cameron and Nick Clegg, remember it was the Tory Lib Dem coalition, basically repealed it as soon as they got in. And in 2011, the Identity Cards Act 2006 was no more. But Blair has never given up. And every, I mean, literally, he barracked the Tories for many, many years. And then when Labour were coming in, he immediately came out and said, you need to have a digital ID straight away. And if you have a look at the date there, on the 7th of July, 2024, Blair was rejected. And everybody gasped. Everybody was like, well, I say everybody, those of us nerdy enough to pay attention to what's happening in the country, gasp, because it seemed like Sir Keir Starmer was saying no to the Dark Lord. You know, yeah, but do you just say no to the Emperor? Can Darth Vader really disobey an order? Well, what happened? So Starmer's government came out straight away and said, we're not going to do this ID thing. And Blair said, Britain's going to need a little bit of persuading on this. Brackets. I'm going to need to torture some people. Sith lightning in the back room. You know, so be it. I don't know, right? So we'll go into some of the stuff that he personally has been doing in the year between Labour rejecting his proposal and what's happening now, because it is really is remarkable. And it's a study in what tenacity, determination, organisation can actually get things done in politics. There he was again earlier this year, basically making exactly the same argument as he was in 2006. Britons will sacrifice privacy for efficiency, okay? But they'll want it. They want the efficiency. They want safety. They want things to work. And, you know, if privacy is the price for it, so be it. So there he was pushing it again. This argument then started to work. There's Mary Harrington, who made the argument Blair was right about ID cards. I saw Hugo Rifkin in the Times just the other day making exactly the same argument. Oh, look, we have already given away so much data to these different companies. It's already happened, basically. So, you know, the privacy concern is neither here nor there. The benefits outweigh the costs, basically. Okay. In the intervening months, Blair quietly met Labour MPs, right? It was reported as Blair picking his rising stars in Labour. He met around, I think it was anywhere between 30 and 40 different MPs that he met around that time. And lo and behold, just last week, Labour MPs called for digital IDs to tackle migration. Isn't it remarkable? Look, 8th of April, 2025, we've gone from Labour rejects Tony Blair's call for ID cards to Labour MPs calling for digital IDs to tackle migration in the space of a year. So you can bet your bottom dollar that those back room, those quiet meetings with Blair and these MPs was him basically working his snake charm magic on the back bench, saying, look, you'll go high places. I can promise you your career. You'll go far. Just sign this letter for me. Make sure you push for this digital ID thing. You can see more than 40 MPs urging ministers to introduce a new form of digital ID to help control the migration system and improve public services. In an open letter, Labour MPs from three groups said a gear shift was needed to reap the benefits of digital identification. The idea of digital ID for all has long been backed by former Labour Prime Minister Sir Tony Blair and Conservative leader William Hague, who is basically like a Blair mini-me, like a Blair minion these days. But the BBC understands the government has no plans to introduce mandatory digital ID. Well, I don't know who's working for the BBC to not notice that the government has already announced plans for what they're calling a digital wallet on gov.uk, right? And there's even prototypes being mocked up and an app and all sorts of things. How is it that the BBC were allowed to say that there's no plans? Well, the key word is mandatory, right? Because they're going to make it optional, first of all. Aye. You think I was born yesterday? they're bringing it in round the back door, piecemeal, first of all, you've got the option, and then lo and behold, they'll make it mandatory. I can guarantee that. And even more disturbingly, I was on the Times, who are quite involved with this, as we'll see. I was on their website looking at their recent articles, and there was a poll, and I just answered the poll, and I was interested to see almost 15,000 people voted on this. Now, bear in mind, they are Times readers, or at least people who are on the Times website, like me. And there you go, 88% of the British public, according to this Times poll, support the notion of a national digital ID. Right, so when Blair said the UK will need a little bit of persuading, yeah, we do a little persuasion. It didn't take him long, did it, to get most of the public on board, right? Now, whether they've gone to the effort of getting bots and so on to try to boost those numbers, I don't know. I actually can likely believe that the numbers are like that. Why do I say that? Because when it comes to these things, most normal people are the same. Oh, it will be convenient. I've got nothing to hide. What are you, a criminal? Why do you care about privacy? So and so on. I already, Amazon and Google already have my name and address. So therefore, what you're worried about. That's how it will go. Now, this video was called What Tony Blair Isn't Telling You About Digital ID. Well, I suppose he's not telling you about his own 24-year process of getting to this point. As I've talked about, but there are other aspects. I would say two main aspects that he's not telling you about. But before I get to those, what is Blair's basic argument? Let us hear the man out, okay? Now, if you're particularly worried about the Dark Lord, maybe cover your eyes or, hum a little bit so this, you don't get the full menace of his voice. But here is Blair explaining, making the case for digital ID. I'll try not to pause, but if I really need to interject, I will.
The Commission has done important work highlighting the role of digital innovation.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I said I wouldn't interrupt, and I immediately did. This Times Commission report, I'll just show it to you. Here it is. This is linked on Blair's video on the Tony Blair Institute. This Times Crime and Justice Commission report, I did kind of have a flick through it. It's pretty detailed. But basically, the entire thing, okay, is a puff piece for Blair bringing in digital ID. Okay, and Blair himself is quoted at various different times throughout this report. Basically, they want to do digital ID, okay? And every time they quote Blair, it's like, yeah, come on, hurry up and do this faster. What you're waiting for? We don't need trials. We don't need, we've been waiting long enough. We need to do this now. So that's one of the main thrusts of this. I did notice, though, that if you keep on drilling down into this report, they talk about violence against women and girls. Okay, fair enough. That's a big issue. But then when you really start drilling into, you get further on down, because what I was worried about was you're trying to sort out crime, but is there anything ideological in there? Is there anything you're slipping in around the back door that people would probably be want to talk about? Well, radicalism, terrorism, and online harms. Now, if you read that stuff, they're mainly talking about Islamic terrorism, but there are some talk of the far right and neo-Nazis and so on, and we all know how elastic that definition is. Okay. What else? They're ostensibly talking about jihadis, right? But as we saw with things like the Patriot Act in America and how counterterrorism is being used, since the Blair government, I wouldn't be surprised, to see they are talking about Southport in there. They are talking about, so you can already see a little bit of mission creep here. Right? Okay, we're starting with solving crime, but it's already getting into a different area here. And, you know, there's a big difference between somebody who is, you know, actually like planning something like, you know, the 7/7 bombings or something like that, actual terrorism, and people talking politics online. There's a huge gap between those two things. But you can see, like, once you introduce these tools, where do you draw that line? What's the line between, you know, and this is where you already see some of the different, you know, extremism behind bars. Now, if you read this, it's actually going on about how many people are radicalized by Islamism inside. But, you know, it does say in the future, we could see a rise in far-right terrorists too. But they're actually focusing on Islam, on Muslim terrorists here, according to this, okay? But you can see that they always give themselves enough room for the mission creep, for the mission creep. Another issue with this, another thing I noticed in this report, and again, Blair is just all over it. He's quoted everywhere, practically on every page. There's a quote from Blair. Okay, but if you carry on and look, they're even talking about Tony Blair's famous pledge: tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you know, this was bankrolled by his network. This whole report. It's just basically a puff piece for Blair Solutions. But yeah, one of the things I noticed is that they talked about misogyny. They talked about, you know, 40% of Londoners believing the police to be institutionally racist. So you get all of this, I guess, woke language in there. Or you look, they're talking about how, you know, there's more white officers as a proportion of police officers, so the police are disproportionately white, things like this. So, you know, some of that stuff is still in there, right? It's still in there. And yet the overall effect of this document is basically to bring in this digital ID regime. Okay, so you can see that there is scope for it to go badly wrong. But anyway, I've interrupted enough. Let's listen to Blair.
In shaping the future of governance and public services, and this discussion could not be more relevant, the benefits are clear. Digital ID will make our interactions with each other and with the state faster, cheaper, and more reliable. It will allow us to judge who has a right to be in our country and who doesn't, and so solves one of the major challenges of immigration. Facial recognition can now spot suspects in real time from live video, tracking organized criminals at borders, in public spaces, even helping find missing people. In London, live facial recognition led to 360 arrests by the Met Police between January and October 2024, just in a pilot project. It boosts response times and helps identify suspects quickly in busy places like train stations and events. Live video from body cams and CCTVs can be used to provide real-time advice to officers from a command center.
See, the thing is, this sounds good, but are they going to start messing with it? You already saw that in the report that this stuff is being, that this speech that Blair is giving is based on, they're talking about things like diversity and misogyny and all this nonsense, okay? They're talking about those sorts of issues in the same report. Now, let's pretend that this digital ID system is absolutely fair, right? Is absolutely non-biased and just goes exactly on facial recognition and is basically what I've described before as Mecha Bentham, okay? Imagine it's Mecha Bentham. Then you have less concerns. But do you trust these people, the people who wrote that report, to make it completely fair and down the line? Or are they going to start messing in with it in all sorts of ways? Okay. You know, maybe turning it up and down depending on which demographic group is involved in the crime, as an example.
Or deploy resources to where they're most needed. AI will go even further, spotting crime patterns, guiding patrols, and streamlining decisions. Police forces are also ditching outdated systems for cloud-based platforms, giving officers real-time access.
See, one of the issues in that report is that they said people no longer trust the police, right? And then they cited institutional racism as the reason, okay? That is not the reason that a vast majority of people in this country no longer trust the police. The reason that people don't trust the police is because they don't believe the police are on their side because of all this diversity stuff, because of all the ideological bunk in there, because of the, you know, different standards of policing, you know, according to different ethnic communities and different minority groups and so on and so forth. It's because of all of that sort of stuff that's gradually eroded trust in the police, because people no longer believe that they're there for them. They believe that they are there as representatives of the state against them. But that is not in the report. I had a look, like that, which most people, if you stop them on the street, would probably tell you about, that is not in the report. What's in the report is all the stuff about institutional racism.
To data and to smarter tools. This means they can get fingerprint matches from a crime scene in minutes, not days, simply by taking a photo with their smartphone. So we cannot continue with business as usual, and change is inevitable. This is where technology like digital ID.
As always, change is inevitable. Change in the direction that I want is inevitable. Blair's always his number one argument. What I want is happening already. It is inevitable. So stop your resistance.
Becomes critical. My institute's own analysis shows that introducing this in the UK would save at least $2 billion a year and likely more by reducing losses to fraud, improving tax collection, and better targeting of state support. We know this because around the world, countries like Estonia, Singapore, even India, have successfully implemented digital ID systems, cutting red tape and improving efficiency. These nations aren't just adopting new technology. They are reimagining how the state itself works. Of course, concerns about privacy and security are valid. But these systems, done in the right way, actually give individuals more control over their own data. With robust safeguards and transparency, we can ensure that digital ID enhances rather than threatens personal privacy. The key is building trust and designing, with thought and intention, systems that are secure, fair, inclusive, and effective at combating crime and making us all safer. The alternative, managing an ineffective status quo, will let down the public.
Is it just me, or does he seem a little bit old? Seems for the first time, he seems like age is creeping up on him. But well, what are some of the issues with this? Well, I'm going to play two more clips here. One is from this guy, Patrick Christie from GB News, who did a video on this last week, and he picked up on some of the potential problems with this. And then I've got another video to play where you can see the absolute doomsday scenario that we are basically facing right now.
The government will tell you that it's all voluntary, all about making your life easier. But let's call this what it is. It's a power grab, pure and simple. It's about centralizing control, about knowing everything about everyone all the time. And sure, they'll say, if you've got nothing to hide, then you've got nothing to fear. But that's not really how freedom works, is it? Privacy isn't about hiding wrongdoing. It's about maintaining the basic dignity of having a life that's yours and yours alone. Let's not mince words here. This is a direct threat to our democratic way of life. When the government has the power to track your every move, both in the real world and online, we are no longer citizens. We're subjects. And history has shown us time and time again what happens when governments have too much power over their people. And let's...
So, yeah, they're kind of basic and a 101 argument, but the concern over tyranny, or the concern over giving an already tyrannical government, if you ask me, even more power, you know, remains quite fundamental. But I think it's worth reminding ourselves just how extreme that level of surveillance totalitarianism can get. And this is where I'm going to bring my second video in. I've shared with it, this with you before, so if you've seen this on one of my older videos, apologies, but it really does need to be seen to be believed, because the number one funder of Tony Blair is not actually Bill Gates. Bill Gates is the number two funder of Blair. The number one funder of Blair is a man called Larry Ellison, who is the founder of Oracle, which already owns a huge amount of data, already runs an awful lot of the systems and the infrastructure, in the digital world already. Well, just listen to how he envisages the digital ID surveillance state. Let's just listen to Larry Ellison for a minute. I'm gonna let this play, because you need to stare into the heart of darkness to understand what this means, and it is going to happen. I mean, I forgot to mention, if you go back to this, right? This is happening. The wheels are in motion. It's not going to be mandatory now. Trust me, once it's in, they'll say, oh, whoops, we're not going to do normal. We're not going to do old-fashioned driving licenses anymore. We're not going to, you need to be on this app. All of the things on the app, go on the app. And slowly but surely, they will funnel everything into there. You know, and it will only be a couple of short years till 2030, let's say. It's 2025 now, until they've eliminated all of the other alternatives and options, until you basically have to be on there to do anything. And then, of course, they have increased control and surveillance. Let's listen to Larry Ellison now.
We think we can absolutely lock down schools so that dramatically reduce the case of anyone being on campus that doesn't belong on campus, and immediately alert. The second someone pulls out a gun, immediately alert, use AI cameras to immediately recognize that. But A, we keep everyone off campus that doesn't belong on campus. The police, another thing, body cameras. We completely redesigned body cameras. Our body cameras cost $70. Normal body camera costs, $7,000. Our body cameras are simply lenses, two lenses attached to your vest, attached to the smartphone that you're wearing. And we actually take the video that the police officer is, by the way, and the camera's always on. You don't turn it on and off. And by the way, the way you turn it on, you can't turn it off. I'm going to the bathroom. Oracle, I need 2 minutes to take a bathroom break, and we'll turn it off. The truth is, we don't really turn it off. What we do is we record it so no one can see it, but no one can get into that recording.
Oh, that makes it brilliant then. That's all right then, Larry. I don't mind, you know, you've just got video of all of these people, you know, in urinals all across the country. That's all right then. Don't worry about it, eh, Tone? It's all right.
Without a court order. So you get the privacy you requested, but...
No, you did not get the privacy you requested, because you still took the recording. So that recording exists, doesn't it?
A court order. If you get a court order, we will, you know, judge, you know, can order. I want to look at that. This so-called bathroom break. If there's something, something comes up, and plus I'm going to lunch with my friends. Oracle, I need an hour for privacy with lunch with my friends. God bless. We won't listen in unless there's a court order. But it's interesting.
Oh, that makes it all right then. If there's a court order, oh, well, just privacy schmivacy in that case. I hope now you can see that the notion of privacy being a thing, well, and still there'll be some people saying, well, you've got nothing to hide, though. You've got nothing to... It's the principle of the thing. Do you want this guy spying on you when you're going to a lunch break? What if, for example, somebody, does do a court order on you and you're innocent, let's just say, right? Let's just pretend you haven't done anything wrong, but some psychopath just, you know, decides because they want to mess with you or whatever, you know, here's a court order. Now, that quote-unquote private bathroom break is now subject to scrutiny in the courts. And it exists because of this framework that is being put in.
And but we transmit the video back to headquarters. So headquarters and AI is constantly monitoring the video. Remember this terrible case in Memphis where the five police officers basically beat to death another a citizen in Memphis? Well, that can't happen because it would be on TV at headquarters. Everyone would see it. Your body cams will be transmitting that. The police will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording, watching and recording everything that's going on.
So that is, to reiterate, he's selling obviously the benefits, the upside of it, but this is a total surveillance state. If you presented what Larry Ellison said in some other context, let's say George Orwell's 1984 or China, right, you'd say that is totalitarianism. And yet this is being sold to us as a solution to our modern ills.
Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. And it's unimpeachable. The cars have cameras on them. I think we have a squad car here someplace. But those kind of applications using AI, if we can use AI, and we're using AI to monitor the video. So if that altercation had occurred, that occurred in Memphis, the chief of police would be immediately notified. It's not people that are looking at those cameras. It's AI that's looking at the cameras. No. You can't do this. It would be like a shooting. That's going to be an event that's immediately, an alarm's going to go off. It's going to be, we're going to have supervision. In other words, every police officer is going to be supervised at all times. And the supervision will, and if there's a problem, AI will report the problem and report it to the appropriate person, whether it's the sheriff or the chief or whomever we need to take control of the situation. We have, same thing, we have drones. We just, if there's something going on in a shopping center, and I'll stop, a drone goes out there, get there way faster than a police car. There's no reason for, by the way, high-speed chases. You shouldn't have high-speed chases between cars. You just have a drone follow the car. I mean, it's very, very simple. And the new generation of autonomous drones. Spotting forest fires, a heat blow drone.
So you get the whole thing. All right, so this, I mean, to me, all of this sounds impossibly dystopian. And, you know, despite the kind of fears and reservations of people like me, it looks like it's happening anyway. It looks like it's gonna come in. And 88% of the public want what Larry Ellison just outlined. See, the funny thing is, I wonder if you played that video of Larry Ellison's directly into the TV homes, into the TV screens of every single person who answered that poll. I wonder if more people would want to vote for it or less people, fewer people. But my sense is that if the full kind of dystopian element of it was put front and center, people would be more reticent to kind of sign up for all of this. But the direction is, if these tools are available, power is going to grab it. Power expands. I've got a book looking at me here by Milton Friedman called The Tyranny of the Status Quo. The Tyranny of the Status Quo. And, well, here we are. The status quo says, we need greater safety. We need greater surveillance. We need greater powers to see what people are doing and thinking and talking about, and here we are. To me, this is, I mean, I've got another book looking at me, F.A. Hayek's Road to Serfdom. And I'd be interested if F.A. Hayek was sitting right next to me right now, how far on the road to serfdom this, what we're talking about, is. Quite a long way from the notion of England as a free land, aren't we? You know, why is all this stuff even necessary would be another conversation, right? Maybe if you hadn't brought about the sorts of people who do these terrible things that Larry Ellison was talking about, or the sorts of people who do these sorts of crimes en masse into the country, maybe we wouldn't even need all of these sorts of things, because we used to have something called a high trust society. Remember that? But all of those things are out the window, of course. Now everybody needs to be monitored. Now everybody needs to be surveyed 24/7. Just to check if you're thinking the right thing, if you're saying the right sorts of things. Maybe that comment was a bit too extreme. You know, I mean, you can just imagine a time where your phone starts warning you, starts giving you a little electric buzz. Ooh, you know, that was a little bit politically incorrect. Can't say that. You know, I mean, where does it stop? And you can say, oh, well, that's, you know, you're letting your imagination run wild. But we're in an environment where that nutter, Larry Ellison, is the guy who's behind this. And you hear the stuff. I mean, the stuff he was talking about sounded like sci-fi even a year ago. It's actually rapidly happening. I've seen footage from those body cams coming out in America. And in America, because you wrap this in the red hat and the MAGA flag, that they're all up for all of this stuff, because it comes in a MAGA hat over there rather than Blair flavored. Anyway, I've ranted on long enough. Let me know what you think. Pick up the Trivium today before you know. I mean, what? I mean, probably eventually you'll get some AI. Hello AI, hello ChatGPT or Grok. Tell me how to do logic. Tell me how to see through rhetoric, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's where we're going, you know. So, yeah, pick up those skills while you still can before you're replaced by a robot. And I'll be back again tomorrow, where I'll be looking at Trump's tariffs and the something called the Misesian calculation problem. I'll actually be back later on for office hours as well. So I'll see you live later on. And yes, get out, go on. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.